I'm speaking today with Sarah Winkler, who is running for re-election to ALEAF ISD trustee position 6. You're also the president of the ALEAF ISD. Tell me a little bit about your time in office as an ALEAF ISD trustee.
I got elected for the first time in 1997, so I've been on board 12 and a half years. During that time, we've had to hire a new superintendent. We, of course, are having a lot of demographic changes. We put in all sorts of new programs, such as a night high school, an early college high school. We've gone to free and reduced price summer school. We put in late bus runs. So we've been trying to make changes to adapt to a changing population, and I think we've done a pretty good job of doing that in the last 12 and a half years. This is not to say we don't still have some challenges, obviously.
Now, the reason you're saying 12 and a half years is because in previous years, the ALEAF ISD election was held in May.
Correct.
And now it is being held in November. Talk to me a little bit about why that is and how that is affecting this particular race.
Well, the legislature changed the law, and not this session, but the session before in the special sessions, requiring all districts to have a joint election with some other governmental entity. Since the city of Houston has November elections, there was no governmental entity for us to partner up with in May, and so we had to move to November, which is why I have that extra half year. And it's much more challenging. I mean, you're having to look at a much wider audience that you have to get the word out to. It's more expensive for the school district, despite the fact they said it would be cheaper for the school district. It's much more expensive. We pay a percentage of Harris County's cost based on the number of polls that we have, and we have 32 polls. So we've gone from 3 to 32, and that's a challenge to try to cover all those polls.
And that's because of early voting requirements?
Well, the early voting, it's all over the city. You can't
right.
cover all the early voting ones. But on Election Day, we have 32, which is what the city normally has in ALEAF. Now, part of ALEAF is not in the city, so it's even more challenging because some of our voters have very little reason to go to the polls because they are not voting for mayor or city council. They're in Harris County. And so we're trying to attract those voters when in reality they normally wouldn't have anything to be voting on except for those constitutional amendments.
Now, how do you think that's going to affect turnout? I mean, these people wouldn't have had anything to come out to vote for in May except for this election either. So do you think that will affect turnout one way or the other?
We're not expecting a huge... there is a bigger turnout for school board in November. There's no doubt about that. Now, the problem is a lot of those people show up at the polls and they don't even know school board's on there. So more people come to the polls, but they're coming totally not knowing about this election, and they walk in there and they'll look at the names, and some of them say, well, okay, this name looks good and we'll vote for that person. Or sometimes they just get that race altogether. So I don't think, as far as the out-of-county voters, yeah, the turnout's not going to be great from them. The mayor's race is not really exciting. We're concerned that the turnout's not going to be great, period. And we actually would like a higher turnout for this election.
Now, I recall some of this debate over having school board elections in November or you know, partnering with, as you say, a local government election instead of, you know, having it by itself in May. And one of the concerns people raised at the time was that having school board elections in November might make them more partisan. Do you think that's been the case in ALEAF this year?
Absolutely, because we have flyers going out saying vote for these Democratic candidates. I gather the political parties look at how you voted in the primary, and so they're labeling candidates as Democrats or Republicans based on who they voted for in the presidential primary. And so, yeah, the Democratic group sent out something for some candidates. So we've got Republican people who are sending letters out endorsing people saying these are Republicans. So, yeah, it's getting a lot more partisan, which is not good for school board.
Now, the because, I guess, of the fact that this is now a first November election.
This is our second.
It's the second one. My understanding is that more of the board is up for election than in previous years. How come that is the case?
The law requires that it's close to half of the board be up at the same time as possible. And a seven-member board, that means one cycle we have four and one cycle we have three.
How had it been previously when in the May election?
Two, three.
So is it that people are serving longer terms now, or have been serving longer terms?
Year. We did lengthen the terms to 4 years.
I see.
In order to have odd year elections with the city every time, rather than running a presidential election for some, you know, which spot was up that year, and we decided city's supposed to be nonpartisan, so hopefully this would be less partisan than running on a presidential election ballot. But a quorum of the board is risky, and we're finding that out, obviously, this year.
And I understand there's a slate of candidates running that are all pushing for sizable tax cuts.
Correct.
Talk to me a little about that. Where is that coming from, and what is the concern that you have about the platform that they are pursuing?
We had a rollback election a little less than a year ago, last November, and one of our communities, Royal Oaks Country Club community, organized against that rollback election, but they were not successful in defeating it. Apparently, they're still angry because that is the neighborhood that has organized this slate that's running now.
When you say a rollback election, what was specifically up for election?
Well, districts now have to, if we want to raise our maintenance and operation taxes, we have to go to the voters to do it if we're at $1.04. We were at $1.04. We wanted to go up to $1.125, and that required a vote of the electorate.
And so they wanted
and
it to
defeat it. Passed.
It did pass.
And which, of course, made them even angrier than they apparently were before. They were also mobilizing against the HCC annexation that was taking place at virtually the same time, which is another 9-cent tax increase. So taxes went up considerably in this area thanks to an annexation from HCC, plus we did this rollback election. And so they've decided to run a slate of four candidates, hired attorneys, hired consultants, have raised considerable amount of money, well over $30,000, which is unheard of in A-Leaf. And their platform is to institute an optional homestead exemption and lower the tax rate and improve schools. Though when asked how they're improving schools, yes, my concern, you can't cut taxes that much when 88% of your budget is salaries and benefits without affecting personnel and students. I mean, there's no way.
What is the size of the tax cut they're looking for, and how much would that actually cost the budget, both in absolute and percentage terms?
They're looking for their latest. They've changed their platform three times, which is also concerning because that means we're not really sure what ultimately they will want to do if they were to take over. But they're now saying 5% optional homestead exemption and a 4-cent tax cut. That's about $10 million out of the budget, which they claim that we could do that by reducing food costs, which is a separate budget, so that won't help. We have a food service budget that's totally separate from operating funds, and non-instructional personnel. And I don't think they realize non-instructional personnel means people like custodians, maintenance, bus drivers, cafeteria people. A lot of essential personnel fall under that category, and that's where they think they can get $10 million worth of cuts.
It's interesting you mentioned bus drivers. The Cy-Fair School District north of here has that optional property tax exemption, and this year they had actually tried to do away with it because of the need to spend more money up there. They were unable to, and one of the things that they wound up doing after they laid off a bunch of employees was cut a lot of bus service.
And which means the kids have to walk farther.
In places where there's no sidewalks.
And we have places with no sidewalks because we're partly in Harris County, and the county doesn't put in sidewalks. So if there are sidewalks near those schools, it's because we paid to have them put in. These non-instructional personnel are important. I mean, I don't think they realize that because several of the people running are not real familiar with our schools. And there's one Royal Oaks resident, for instance, that I think set foot in the school for the first time about a month ago. And so she thinks that she knows what to cut the budget, when in reality, I don't think they understand, you have a maintenance operations budget, you have a capital projects budget, and debt service type budget. Because they'll say things like, well, you shouldn't spend money on fixing a stadium, bricks are falling off the stadium, or redoing roofs. That's different funds. Those are different funds. That's from a bond sale that the voters approved. We can't use that money to pay teachers.
Now, it's easy to talk about this sort of thing. I guess the argument that they might make is, well, we need to do more with less. What has A-Leaf ISD been doing with the increased tax monies that it got through that rollback election in 2007?
Well, first of all, we have cut that. We cut over 100 positions in 2007 by changing. We changed to a 7-period day at the high school. That requires less personnel. We didn't have to lay people off because in the natural flow of things at the end of the school year when teaching jobs turn over, enough people left, we just didn't hire more people. But we have started a lot of new programs that are expensive that are not being reimbursed. For instance, those late bus runs I mentioned earlier, we don't get reimbursed by the state for running two late bus runs to allow kids to go to night school and to tutorials and stay for extracurricular activities. You know, it used to be if they didn't have a ride home, they couldn't stay. Well, now they have a ride home with us. The night school is expensive. The kids that attend night school and also attend during the day, they're trying to catch up that are behind. We don't get funded for that either. That's money, you know, they only get funded for one school day. So if they're here more than one school day, and we have a lot of students doing that because they've gotten behind for one reason or another, that costs money. And the early college high school is just starting up. So you have the startup costs of starting that program. So we've done a lot of new things in the past few years, expanded programs like advancement via individual determination, commonly called AVID. That's for students that are kind of in the middle of the pack. In other words, we're starting programs to reach different types of kids. You know, some for these kids that are struggling down here, some AP-type course and more AP stuff for kids at the top and more for the kids in the middle. And, you know, we're not being reimbursed by the state for a lot of these programs because we're adding things that they won't pay for.
Well, isn't it also the case that the state is paying less to schools overall as a result of the property tax cuts that came out of the special session of 2006?
We actually, under the new House Bill 3646, because we were so low, I mean, we had the targeted revenue that was the second lowest in Region 4. Districts way down there got a little more money. Nonetheless, everybody got more money, so we're still behind as far as our funding per pupil. So we are getting, we're not getting as much as we could have been. We are getting some federal money. We get that ARRA funding. But that's targeted to specific populations, special ed, you know, economically disadvantaged kids. We can't use that for the entire student population. So, you know, we're not getting enough money, no, but we are getting some money. I don't want people to think that we didn't get anything out of the last session. We did. We got a little bit more than, say, Spring Branch would have gotten.
Okay. So give me a picture of how ALEAF ISD is doing in terms of its student performance. You have a lot of new programs geared towards, it sounds like mostly helping students who have special needs of one kind or another. How is ALEAF's performance overall in terms of you know, the state's ratings on tax and on the federal government's No Child Left Behind?
Well, we went from one exemplary school the year before last to nine this year, and we have 21 recognized campuses. We only have 42 campuses, so the tax scores have gone way up. At the high school level, they've gone up double digits. In every content area, we're increasing faster than the state is in that same content area. We still aren't at the state level, which is where we would like to be in some areas, but we have a different population than the state has. If you look at districts that are like us, we do very well. Now, as far as AYP goes, we're continuing to have a special ed problem. We have too many kids that are identified as special ed taking a different test, and we've got to do something about that because that alone makes the entire district not meet AYP.
I'm sorry, what is AYP?
Adequate Yearly Progress.
Okay.
And so despite the fact that we have no unacceptable schools, you know, 21 recognized schools and 9 exemplary campuses, according to federal government, the entire district doesn't meet AYP. And so that's one reason it's very hard for parents to understand. You've got a state system that we are doing well, and the federal system says we're not. And it's a challenge to try to explain that. And it's mostly because of you can only have 3% of your students that take a special ed test. And if our ARC committee, which is, you know, that's under federal law, assigns them that test, that's what those kids are taking. And so we're going to probably have to choose essentially between doing what's best for that child or doing what will get the district a better rating under the federal system, which is a shame that we would have to do that.
Is there some hope to be able to, like, merge the standards? I mean, this is something that I've asked people about in the HISD trustee races because HISD has the same kind of problems. Is there some way that you can reconcile the two, or is it beyond your control on the school board?
Well, we've sent all these suggestions about, for instance, if a child is, say, economically disadvantaged, special ed, and Hispanic, and doesn't do well, they count against you three times in all three of those categories. We've asked for proportionality. In other words, take a third off in one category, a third off in the other, a third off in the other. That would help. They won't, so far, are not willing to do that. That it's not reasonable to have one child count three times. That's how the system works right now. I don't think it's unreconcilable. Do I think politically it's going to be reconciled? Probably not. They are looking at national standards. You may know that Texas has declined to participate. So if the state of Texas declines to participate, that would be a little bit of a problem. So if they adopt national standards and our state is one of only, I believe, three or four that are declining to participate, that would be a problem for Texas districts. But they don't want to do it because they spent a lot of money working on the programs we already have.
An issue that I ask people about in HISD has to do with the merit pay for teachers. It's kind of contentious in HISD. What's your position on merit pay for teachers, and you know, how big an issue is it in ALEAF?
It's not a huge issue in ALEAF. We've been using the TEED program, which they just got rid of, and so now the only incentive pay program through the state is called DATE. And so we are, of course, going to pursue some of those funds. The main problem we see is if all you're looking at is a tax score, how is that fair to a teacher that doesn't teach a tax course, for instance? I mean, you know, there are other courses that are important that aren't measured by that test. What about the support personnel at that campus? I mean, they're important to how those students do. They aren't recognized very much under the state system that's in place. So we're worried about how the campus morale is if you have certain people being rewarded on a campus and other people that have no chance of being rewarded, and they think their job isn't as important, and we think it is. So there's problems with it. I'm not opposed to it. You've got to find a way, and I know HISD's worked real hard to find a way to look at things besides just tax scores. And to get personnel all on the same page and agree that what we're looking at is the right thing, you've seen what's happened in HISD. It's very difficult to have a meeting of the mind, so to speak, as to what's important.
HISD is often criticized for not conducting its business in a sufficiently transparent manner. It's only recently that the board meetings have been on the public access cable, and you know, they still have a ways to go on making data available on their website and stuff like that. Talk to me about how ALEAF ISD is doing on that. Do you believe AISD conducts its business in a sufficiently transparent manner?
Well, I think we do, but we're not an HISD problem. We don't have our own TV access channel like they do. They have a TV studio at their main offices. We're a smaller district than that. You know, the Houston area districts all kind of pale in comparison to HISD, which is this big behemoth that gets a lot of the attention, which can be good or bad depending on what's going on in our district. We, you know, everything's posted. Now, I can tell you that some people would say, no, they don't know what's going on. So I think that you can always have more transparency. Parents don't come to board meetings. I mean, you know, it's on the website when it is. The agendas and everything are on the website, of course. But most people do not come. If you look at the audience, it's primarily personnel. And so it would be nice if more people would be involved and they would come and they would know what a school board does, because they don't know what we do. They perceive us as, you know, doing day-to-day operational things in the district, which we do not. And so if something goes wrong in a classroom, they think, you know, you can call a school board member and I can fix it. And, you know, if they came to board meetings, they'd understand more what our job really is.
Well, do you foresee the possibility of AISD, for example, videotaping its board meetings and posting video on the web?
Yeah, we could do that. I know Cy Fair has done that. And of course, you know, some of the districts where things are contentious, what that gets posted is kind of like a blood sport as to what's on their video. But and I would hope board members wouldn't. The one concern I have is people who might play to that video, you know, camera, and, you know, all of a sudden get on and some kind of stuff and try to sell themselves. I don't see that as being a big problem in ALEAF because we don't have people that are looking to move on to other offices as much as you would in a bigger district, for instance. So, no, I wouldn't have a problem doing that. I think it might be informative for some people to have that on there.
As you say, ALEAF ISD is partly within the city of Houston, as are some of the other smaller school districts. maybe it's just my ignorance, but why does A-Leaf ISD even exist if it's within, why isn't it the case that HISD covers all of Houston? How is it that there are these other little districts?
Well, under the legislative law, essentially, way back when, you know, all these districts were formed as independent school districts. A-Leaf's been around a long time. We started out a rural district. Where
presumably before some of this stuff was annexed by the city of Houston,
yeah,
is that how it is?
Yeah, but originally it was not in the city of Houston. This neighborhood that I live in was not in the city of Houston until about, I think, about 25, 30 years ago. And so A-Leaf started out well before that and shipped all their kids to high school somewhere else and then grew from there to we're not a small district, we're 45,000 students. I think, you know, some states, the whole county is a district. But look how big HISD already is.
Right.
And the problems that go with being that big, would we want them bigger? I think probably not. Because it's not just our district. You would be talking about, let's see, probably Pasadena and Aldine, North Forest. There are quite a few districts that are in the city of Houston. Spring Branch, I think, is partly in the city of Houston, partly in those little tiny Piney Point and other little villages. So it would get way bigger than it already is and all the problems that go with that.
Okay, you know, the mayor's race, education has been an issue in the city of Houston. A number of the candidates have talked about, you know, various education-related things, appointing, you know, someone to be in charge of it, stuff like that. What role, if any, do you see the city of Houston playing in? You know, A-Leaf ISD. In what way, if any, can the city of Houston do things to work with or benefit A-Leaf ISD?
We sure would like some help with after-school programs. The funding funnels down through sometimes federal government, state government, and gets to some city areas, 21st Century Grant, for instance. And a lot of that money has dried up. And the city could help us if they wanted to partner. We need some more after-school programs. I know HISD and all the other districts are struggling. We are now partnering with the Workforce Commission, and we're having to charge a fee for some of our students. We would like to be able to have it be free because most of the children latchkey. You know, when they go home, there's nobody there. Their parents have to work. And so being able to keep them at school and do tutorials and fun things like mad science and some of the other things the kids like to do, it's a lot safer for them, it's a lot safer for the community. So I would like them to be more involved there. As far as day-to-day curriculum, I don't really see that the city has a place being involved in that. You don't need another layer of government. You've got enough government people involved with the federal government, state government, and school board all vying for what is our job, and that keeps shifting back and forth a little bit every legislative session.
Okay. All right, so just when people come to vote in this election and the early voting has started, why should they vote for you when they vote in this election?
Well, I certainly hope they would vote for, first of all, I have a lot of experience, and I'm now president of the Texas Association of School Boards also, and I testify before legislative committees all the time about education issues. I think that that is a very important role for A-Leaf right now, to get our voice heard on school funding and accountability issues. I've been asked to look at legislation and say, you know, how will this work? You know, that's not something you can pick up in a few minutes. You know, I still mentor kids in our district. I have 5 sons that attended this district. Education has always been really important in my life and my children's lives. And working with these kids that I mentor, they need those same opportunities, and I'm looking for ways to make sure they get it. And I think that's why I, you know, at this point, for personal reasons, you know, personally, I could move on and just work at the state level. But I care about this school district, and I think it's important to have people on the board that have been involved. You know, you need a mix of people. You need somebody's experience. You need new blood. You need all kinds of things on the board. If you have all new people, you're going to lose whatever institutional knowledge you do have and the experience that I have, and I think it's important to have that.
All right. Sarah Winkler, thank you very much for talking to me today.